This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Just come back from India, and what a fantastic destination. And which brings me to our special guest today. And I'm just going to press this button, and if all goes well, we'll all be able to say hello to Joy 94.9 Joy Celebrity presenter David Gale. Are you there?
Well, of course I'm here.
Well, that's good.
David, look, you know, listeners, you might know me as David Gale, Monday, 12 till 4, bringing you Melbourne's most uplifting music mix. But in my spare time, I do like to travel, and strangely enough, I go travelling with Russ Masterton from the wonderful Escape Pod Hour every Saturday, 1 till 2. Do you like that?
Oh, that's a good plug. Thank you very much.
I want to do that too. I want to travel with David and Russ next time you go to India.
So as a roundup, David, how did you find India this time? What was your favourite place?
Now, look, just in case the listeners aren't aware, Russ and I have travelled to India a couple of times before. This was our third trip together, and I'd actually been once before as well. But so we sort of know the lie of the land, and I suppose a lot of people are a bit apprehensive about going to India. There's nothing really to be apprehensive about because, you know, a lot of people would say, look, I'll go to Italy. I haven't been there before, and they just take it on. We'll go there. But for some reason, people have this little fear about India, and India remains the same. It is outstanding. It's incredible. Every place you visit is like visiting another planet, and you can travel overnight on a train and arrive on another planet in the solar system every time you go to India, and it changes. Did you notice, Russ, that it had changed quite a bit this time?
I think, the weirdest thing for me, David, is I feel like they're cleaning it up. And I know that sounds really odd, but over the past 3 years, I feel as though I've experienced India at its, not at its best and worst, but I was so surprised by how clean Mumbai is, for example, which is the city that Slumdog Millionaire is surrounded by. But the city is just clean and stunning and absolutely spectacular, isn't it?
And, of course, Mumbai, I hadn't been to for 5 years, and the first thing I noticed was that. And they actually, Prime Minister Modi, who we, of course, saw while we were on this trip, he actually has been cleaning up Mumbai quite a lot. And if you want to go somewhere just for one city, maybe drop into Mumbai, because it is a little bit more western than most of the other cities. They actually use road rules, believe it or not, in Mumbai, and that's very, very different to anywhere else in India. Very, very different place to the place I visited last 5 years ago, and quite an amazing place in itself. What was your favourite this time, Russ?
Well, you know, for me, I generally love Varanasi. I have fallen in love with Varanasi because of the Ganges, and I love the spiritualness around that city. So they have a huge Hindu ceremony on the water, on the shore of the Ganges every night, and we sort of pushed our way to the front of the viewing platform and took photos of all of these priests doing all these amazing things with incense and fire and the whole crowd just going off with this gang thing happening.
Strangely.
Oh, it was.
Now, strangely enough, we were standing in front of the hottest of those six high priests, virtually in the mosh pit of the Hindu ceremony, and it is spectacular to watch whether you're on the water in a small boat or whether you're up in the mosh pit, as we were this time. It is an amazing ceremony just to see at least once in your lifetime. A lot of Indian people will make a pilgrimage to Varanasi just to see that ceremony once in their lifetime. We're very privileged as Western tourists to be able to go there on multiple occasions. And, of course, we were there at the same time. We arrived in our guest house on the Ganges, and, of course, Russ and I went out on the balcony, and there's Prime Minister Modi and also the President of France, Macron, just happened to arrive up on the water, walked up the steps of the Ganges,
and
they went.
Now, can you tell me, David, what was the actual ceremony about that you were there for?
Oh, look at the whole whole lot of Hindu mumbo jumbo. I have no idea. It is on every night.
It's on every night.
Strangely enough, a Tuesday night ceremony goes for about an hour and a half. Now, we've been out on the water for the hour and a half ceremony, which I think goes for about a half an hour too long. It is a spiritual ceremony for believers. And I kept saying to Russ, we're going to move a little bit aside there, because there were people there that had made their spiritual adventure to Varanasi, and they come to see, and they know the words to whatever they were singing, but it is quite spectacular to see from our viewpoint. I'm not a Hindu, and all respect to those people that are Hindu that may be listening today, but it is definitely a spectacular thing to see. It is a city also where people go to die. A lot of people, if they are fortunate enough, will end up dying in Varanasi. Now, that doesn't make it a morbid place, but Hindu tradition is to have your body burnt on a funeral pyre and for your ashes to be thrown into the Ganges, which is what a lot of people do, or they may bring their dead ones to Varanasi as well. Now, that might sound a bit morbid, but it's a cause of celebration for people within the Hindu religion. And they actually give away their ashes to the mother Ganga, and they're swept into the Ganges every morning. I wouldn't advise swimming in the Ganges there, but there are.
I've heard some stories about this, David, and a friend of mine, Sue, who's also a travel agent, she's put her hand into the Ganges and seen the odd finger or toe go past in the river. So, you do have to, you have to watch that.
As a matter of fact, I saw a fascinating documentary once on the fact that a lot of the locals actually do swim and bathe and wash their clothes in the Ganges, and there's been a lot of questions about why they never get sick. And this particular documentary I saw posed that the origin of the Ganges actually has this unique bioflora, which actually gives the Ganges the ability to resist all of the things that are thrown into it, the bodies, the dead cows, all that sort of stuff. I know we're saying nice things about India, but there are, of course, a lot of those things that are floating in the Ganges. And the reason why people don't get sick is because of this unique bioflora at the source of the Ganges.
Well, that would make sense. They have these gorgeous ghats all along the river of the Ganges, and so you go down there, and part of the being Hindu is you go in there and you bathe every morning. So the locals and people on pilgrimage all go in there and wash themselves from head to toe. And this
we've watched them do that.
We definitely have. And this spiritual thing about the place to go and die as a Hindu, it's actually quite beautiful. So the people do pass away in Varanasi, and then they're wrapped in this shroud, and they're paraded through the city with all these beautiful colours. Then they are dipped in the Ganges, and then they're roasted, and then the ashes are popped into the Ganges. But they do about 200 people a day on the banks of the Ganges, and that's their thing there, because people want to go there to go back to Mama Ganges and die. So it's very interesting stuff.
And
now,
after
Varanasi is Russ's favourite, and my favourite, because we decided to do a little best of tour, would be Udaipur, which is the city by the lake, and that's in central Rajasthan. And we both visited there before. It is just a beautiful, beautiful city around a lake. There's an old city with a palace, which is wonderful to visit. This time we actually went and visited their Crystal Museum, which was quite outstanding as well. Beautiful old streets, which virtually you can't fit a car down.
You just wanted to add those items to your crystal, your little crystal collection, didn't you, David?
Well, there were a few there that I had my eye on, I will admit. But
a bit like your Tupperware collection.
And strangely enough, my crystal Tupperware collection. But strangely enough, we were actually able to see more of the everyday life this time around. And it was great to see their regular markets where people go to buy their fresh food. We also saw some streets where they sell all their wedding gear. It's always wedding ceremony time of the year for some reason in India. Everybody's always getting married, although it's not an equality marriage country. But we saw a lot of the market streets. We went out to some of the smaller villages around where they do farming and did some bicycle touring around that area. And look, Russ, you enjoyed Udaipur, didn't you? I mean, it is such a beautiful city, especially at night time too.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's set on Lake Pecola, which I absolutely adore. We had a very romantic dinner for two on date night, even though we're not going out together. And it was absolutely beautiful just looking at it at Lake Pecola there together and having that gorgeous meal. And we stayed in an old palace because India is full of old palaces, which are absolutely stunning.
Oh, it is. It is.
It's a beautiful, course, beautiful place, Udaipur.
The Lake Palace Hotel is in the centre of Lake Pecola, which is, if you're rich and wealthy and famous, that's probably where you're going to stay. I don't know whether I could afford to stay there one night, but it looks like a little wedding cake just set in the lake itself. And you'd probably see it if you do a search on some photos using your favourite search engine. You'll certainly see the lake with this beautiful little wedding cake sitting in the middle there. But once again, a beautiful place at this time of the year too. You know, 30 to 35 degrees every day wherever we travelled. And it was a lovely time of the year to be there. We have been there in April. It gets a little bit warmer again, probably closer to the 40s. Certainly in Western Rajasthan, it'd be about 45 degrees. But even then, it's still not undoable. It's still quite a nice time of the year before the monsoon set in. And then, of course, Mumbai, well, spectacular city. And once again, each of the three is so different, once again, from the last.
Well, you packed a lot in. I mean, you were only travelling for, what, 10 days?
10 days.
Yeah, 10 days.
That's a lot of country to cross. Did you fly between places or catch the trains?
We usually train. Trains are quite enjoyable experience. The first time I did it, because I'm a bit of a first-class boy, I don't like, I can't even go camping. I'm a bit of a glamper. So the first time I went on a train, I forced myself into the nicest carriage on board and realised that David had bought me a second-class ticket. And then we were banged out of there I was in this bunk bed with five other people and people's phones going off and families coming in at 2 o'clock in the morning screaming out, "You're in my bed." And I said, get out.
If you can experience the real India experience, really you do need to catch trains. It really is an amazing system and it runs all over the country, not into Udaipur. So that's actually one of the reasons we did fly this time, because you can't actually get into Udaipur by train, unfortunately. But, at the same time, you can see a lot of the countryside by taking the trains. We actually took one of their new airlines, an airline that's only been going for 2 years. Now, I can mention it by brand because it's not available in Australia, but it's actually called Vistara. And it was started up 2 years ago by Tata, who is a very wealthy Indian. He owns a car company, a mobile phone company, a whole lot of other things. He doesn't need any more money or any more business, but he decided to start up this domestic airline company, and it's in conjunction with the national carrier of Singapore. And it's quite an amazing new airline. If you're in India, one of the best internal airlines that I think we've ever taken. Would you agree, Russ?
Oh, absolutely. Loved it to bits. Loved it. It was very, very nice and very roomy. Now, I know the panel are dying to ask you some questions, so perhaps you could just give us your views on the slum area of Mumbai, which I found terribly interesting. I know our listeners would love to hear about that, and then I'm going to hand it over to the panel to ask you a few India questions.
All right, well, look, I hadn't seen the slums before, and I was sort of a little bit, I don't know whether I really want to go and see the very poor area where, you know, people may actually be making money out of it and all that sort of stuff by touring us through there. So I was having a conscious decision about that. But our guide through Mumbai said, yeah, look, sure, I'll take you to the slums. He took us there, and strangely enough, we found out later on that he actually lived in the slums. And people in the slums, there's about 2 million people there. Half of it is divided into an industrial area. Nothing is wasted in India. It is all recycled through the slums of Mumbai, from plastics to cans and to all sorts of things. And then the other half is this rabbit warren of homes where people live in these little places. Not unlike how other people would live in India. In the country towns, they would live very similarly, but maybe not as cramped together. Certainly in Mumbai, people would live in apartments and things like that. But an interesting and large community. There's a huge market. It's very clean, actually. It used to be quite filthy before Slumdog Millionaire. But, you know, here we had a little guide who was 20 years old, going to university, working in tourism, with plans for his future. So it's probably an inspirational area where people go, you know what, I want to go on and do things in the world and get on in my life.
He was a gorgeous guy. I had a man crush on him.
Samir.
Beautiful little thing.
He was great.
But what's interesting about Samir is that these guys live and families live in the slums and were brought up there, and this particular tour company in India is employing them to be guides. And they don't just do guides of the slums, they do guides of all of the other areas. But certainly there are 2 million people that live in the slums. A lot of people choose to live in the slums because they don't have to pay for water and they don't have to pay for electricity. Mm. So you can have very wealthy people living there, and it's just a matter of choice in some people's cases that they choose to live in the slums just because of the free water and the free electricity. But certainly there is a huge industry going on in there as far as what's the word I'm looking for? It's recycling. It's absolutely amazing what they do in there. So I'm going to hand this over to the panel now, David, to ask you a question. So, Tess, have you got any questions for David at all?
Hi, David. It's Tess.
Hi, Tess.
How are you going? I was wondering, because I think everybody associates India with yoga. How common is yoga when you walk through the streets? Like, can you just stop anywhere and do a yoga class, or do they do it out in the parks like the Chinese do the Tai Chi in the morning? Or,
well, I can tell you, for a start, you're not going to pay the same as you're paying here in Australia to go to a yoga class. And Russ actually went out walking early in the morning in Mumbai, uh-huh, and just along the waterfront, and came across a laughing yoga class. But, you know, there are yoga schools, there are yoga teacher training centres. We went up to Rishikesh in our last trip a year ago, and Rishikesh is well known because the Beatles travelled there for there to find themselves, and they had a yogi up in Rishikesh who taught them about the spiritual sides. There are so many opportunities for yoga, and, you know, maybe you could look into whichever city you're going to, you could look into which schools there are going to be, and, you know, check out prices and places to stay. Choose a place you want to stay in for a while. Rishikesh certainly is a centre for that. I will admit, though, when Russ and I caught the train from Varanasi up to Rishikesh, we had the choice of yoga meditation, spirituality, or whitewater rafting. And I can tell you which one we took.
Every time.
In that Ganges, in the water, going, oh, my God, this is amazing. But you can do anything you want in India. And I would say, you know, if you were really trying to advance in yoga, why not go to Byron Bay, well, nothing against Byron Bay, when you could go to India and experience a culture as well as maybe some yoga as well?
Absolutely.
There's nothing better than a bit of laughing yoga. Now, Stefan's got a question for you.
Yes, you mentioned...
Hello, Stefan.
Hello. You mentioned that India wasn't a marriage equality country. I'm quite interested to know, as an LGBTI traveller, what is it like?
Is there a gay scene?
Yeah, is there a gay scene?
Is there a gay scene, in a word?
Is it safe? Is it...
No.
Well, David,
no,
your grinder was certainly going off the whole time we were away. I couldn't stop. I heard your grinder going off.
This is the point. Now, in India, you could be punished for having sex with another man there, and there are penalties in place. It's not an equality country as far as we're concerned. Having said that, now, I don't go on holidays to have sex with other members of my own sex, but at the same time, I flick on my grinder and I'm in Delhi and I'm going, oh, yeah, what's happening here? 7 minutes in, 11 hits. Now, it is a large city, and maybe I was just the latest white trash that had just arrived in Delhi.
I'm sure it wasn't that, David.
Well, it could have been. Anyway, thank you. But there is a very active scene, but it is kept underground to a certain extent. Very similar to visiting maybe a Middle Eastern country where, you know, certainly sex between consenting adults would be even punishable with, you know, corporal punishment or even death. There is an active scene. You'll notice that the profile photos won't be of people, usually of their own faces, and certainly not even of themselves.
And how did we find out about that?
Well, you know, through just experience in chatting with people. But there is a large community. And if you want to possibly meet people, whether it be for sex or even just to get to know local people, you can certainly use the apps in India, because you'll find that people are very active on those.
Which is good. And look, you know, India does have 2.5 million, it's approximately 2.5 million GLBTI members. Mm. So they are there and they love to hear from us when we're there. So certainly there aren't...
2 million GLBTIQ members of what? What, are they members of the world or what are they, Russ?
Oh, they're members of our community, David. You know, so we need
So there's 1.2 billion people and the numbers are quite staggering. You visit Delhi or you visit Mumbai, 22 million people live in each of those cities. So you're probably looking at about 2 million LGBTIQ people in each of those cities. It's staggering because Australia would fit in either of those two capitals virtually.
Now, David, one of the things that I find overwhelming about India, now I have not been for a number of reasons, and I definitely want to make it, but one of the things I've always been concerned about is, where do you start? I mean, it's so huge. Obviously, you want to take in a city, but there's so many different aspects. I mean, there's, you know, the northern regions up near the Pakistan border. We've had a couple of guests on the show from that area.
And of course,
I believe,
from the Punjab.
From the Punjab. But no, I believe that Russ has been up there a couple of times. Where would you start for someone who is a novice and you've been there a few times? What would be your top suggestions?
Look, you know, especially after seeing Mumbai, and 5 years ago I was there when they had their old airport, which dated back to the 50s. The new Mumbai airport is spectacular. You have never seen anything like it. It is the number one airport, I would say, in the world at the moment, probably because of its newness, but it is outstanding. Mumbai would be a great city to start. It is enormous, but you can easily get around it. You catch cabs. There are government cabs in every major city, and you just go to the government cab stand and get a cab to, let's say, your hotel. You can choose hotels on any of the websites that offer accommodation booking. You can also look up books. There was a year that we went... that we went through Christine Manfield's guidebook. So there's a lot of different guidebooks and they'll suggest different sorts of places you can stay. So let's say Mumbai would be a great place to start. Rajasthan is extraordinarily popular amongst Western travellers because it is so beautiful and each of the major cities, whether it be Udaipur, Jodhpur and Jaipur, they have great palaces and great places to look around in and they're of great interest and certainly accommodation is of great Western standard. It's a great way to learn a little bit about India. You always start booking some reasonable hotels because India is full on and it is light, it's dark, it's rich, it's poor, it's happy, it's sad, it's loud, it's quiet, and that's just the first 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to be able to have somewhere where you can step into India and then step out of India. And Russ, I think we've hit on a time limit that we found, because it is so overwhelming to the senses all the time. What was the time limit that we came up with this trip?
Well, we found that we could spend 2 hours out in the madness, and then we'd need 2 hours by the pool or 2 hours by the hotel or 2 hours in a shopping centre, whatever. Mm. But
anywhere quiet.
Yeah, in the middle of the mayhem of what is India, and it certainly is spectacular and it's colourful and beautiful and absolutely gorgeous, but 2 hours it was our max anyway. That's all we could find. So, Stefan, have you got a question?
David, we've told us about accommodation. What's the food like? What would you recommend?
There is so much food to sample from. Food tours are a great way to get to know about India, Indian food. There's, you know, just like if you said, oh, look, I like Japanese food, you know, there'd be about nine or so cuisines that any of us here in Australia could identify. And in India, there's different foods from the north to the south, different regions, of course. It can be prepared spicy. It can be prepared not too spicy. Most of the food is vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And to tell you the truth, it's usually your safest bet, too, with India, with Indian food. The food is varies. The breads are amazing. Everything's always so fresh as well. Your risk of food poisoning is just as high in an international hotel as it is on the street. Mm-hmm. But keeping an eye on how food is prepared is probably the key, and making sure things are well cooked, and also eating food that looks really fresh. Drinking bottled water, of course, is always a prime tip, but that's the same in any country around the world that isn't certainly of Western standard. You know, you throw the dice. Mm. But at the same time, you can go to a pharmacy, any pharmacy in India, and you will be able to purchase whatever drug you need to make yourself well again.
Exactly. Yeah. And
isn't that right, Russ?
Well, you know, I will go out on a limb and say I bought back about 50 packets of Viagra because they were only a dollar each.
Are you sure you got Viagra?
Well, yes, I've tried one of them.
Okay.
I'm very
I'd
sure.
be doubtful, but...
No, I did buy 50 packets of Viagra and they work, so but they were only a dollar each compared...
Well, if that isn't an advertisement for India, what else?
Well, I know. Why wouldn't you go there? Exactly right. Tess, do you have another question for David?
I think a lot of people are scared.
We're moving on from Viagra now.
I think a lot of people are scared, though, because they worry about food poisoning and things like that. Yeah. It's no different to any other country in the world, really.
So, David, do you need a visa? Is it easy to get a visa to go to India?
I'm glad you asked, Tess. It's very easy to get a visa. You can get a visa similar to buying an electronic or what do you call them, e-visas, that you'd buy to go to the United States. You can do that online. There's certain agencies and government websites that you can get that online. And they're called visa on arrival. You arrive in, there's major airports, certainly Mumbai and Delhi are the major airports. I think also Chennai. I'm not going to be quoted because I'm not a travel agent. But some of the other major entry points in India will also take e-visas. You arrive, you walk straight through, they stamp your visa and your passport and you're in. And it's a really easy process. It used to be a little bit more arduous where you'd go to the Indian consulate here in Melbourne or, you know, use an agency to get a visa. But the e-visa will take a day or, you know, 72 hours to get online and you're ready and raring to go.
Fantastic. They should all do that.
Well, you know, David, we do have to let you go now, and thank you for your detailed itinerary on India today. We loved it.
Yes, thank you, David.
We can highly recommend it.
I hope you're getting lots of SMSs in there.
We are.
A lot of people are asking questions, and you'll have to answer them, Russ.
Well, I know Fiona and Stefan are about to read some of those out, so it's very exciting here in the studio at the moment. We're all hanging to read some of these messages out, so we'll let you get back to work, but thank you again for a wonderful... all that wonderful input on India. I'm sure everybody wants to go now.
My advice is just do it. Just go and just learn about it all.
Have a great day, David. Thank you again.
Thanks, David.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.